Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Welcome to the Michigan Wild Podcast.
We're just here walking around. We're going to go set a tree stand. Don't worry, my dad's weird. He never shot a huge buck.
I just shot a freaking big buck.
Hit him. Go get that one, Henry. Prayer.
Size of that deer.
We'll be right back.
All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of Michigan Wild. I am back. Yes, late, but I'm back. Sorry for not getting this episode out to you guys earlier this week. It has been just a couple weeks, man. Been chaotic, been busy, just getting ready for deer season and everything else going on. Typically for the past 2 years, right, I've been able to find time throughout the week and kind of fit my free time in the evenings, those kind of things. The last couple weeks, just with how crazy work is, doing a lot of driving for work currently, projects pretty far out. Essentially, not going to complain, but I'm going to complain. I can use this as a kind of a little vent session because it's just going to be me solo this week. So here you go. All right, guys. I had a guy on a job that he decided he didn't want to do everything that he said he was going to do, essentially, and said, hey, I'm not doing this. I've had enough. And he walked, right? And that, it wasn't a job that I was running, but it was a job buddy was running and his job. And he asked if I could help. And I said, sure. And just because I knew the situation and there wasn't really, you know, really any other options at the time. So I said, yes, I'll do it. And it's been just a chaotic time doing that, trying to find guys to help. Found, you know, a couple guys that are around the Grand Rapids area were able to kind of help. I'd drive them up to Traverse City where this job was and just getting through it, right? Well, that's just been really difficult because I've had to be home every night. So driving 2 hours one way, morning and night, 4 hours of drive time every day. And then throw that into football and coaching for my son, Henry. I had signed up to be an assistant coach and, you know, being gone in Wyoming. This is all going on right during this time, too. This has been like a month or two of just chaos. But now, you know, to do all the driving, get home, bring Henry to practice, coach for 2 hours, get home, eat dinner by about 9:30 and get him to bed. And there we go. It's 10 o'clock and I'm pretty much wiped. So yeah, I haven't really been on my A game with recording with guests like I normally do, but we're getting through it. And then to add on to it, all my cameras and all my stuff that I use for doing that, when I do digital podcasts, are sitting in my truck in Omaha right now. So yes, my truck is still sitting in Omaha filled with stuff. It's another problem. I mean, I don't have my licenses. I don't have my bow. I don't have my backpacks. I don't have anything. Cause when I left my truck to come home, I was told it would only be a day or two. And then I was planning on flying back and getting my truck and driving it home. And then that turned into, I need a whole motor. So a 2-year-old truck is got a motor problem, needs a new motor replacement, and it's got 120,000 miles. And I guess that's as long as they make them these days. So that's a big time bummer, right? That's been stressful in itself because what do I do for wheels? I had a rental car for a couple days and I had to buy a rental car out of pocket. And then now I did find a older 10-year-old truck that I'm just buying with cash. And I'm going to hopefully get me by through the winter because they're telling me that it could be 3 months, 3 months before my truck's fixed. Be prepared for 3 months. It could be more is what I was told. Because they can't find a motor, right? Like GM does not have a motor available for my truck. And I got the little diesel 3-liter. And thank God I bought an extended warranty when I bought the truck new because I would be really SOL right now if I did not have that. So thankfully, out-of-pocket cost, there's a little bit of out-of-pocket cost for this whole ordeal, right, with buying rentals and dealing with this. And some stuff isn't covered. But for the most part, everything's covered, and I'm just thankful that I got that because I don't know what I would do right now. But the downside is I have to wait for that thing to get fixed, and I need to do something in the meantime. So for the cost of what an engine replacement would be if I had to do myself, I found a truck for cash that I am buying, and hopefully it gets me through these next 12 months because I need a pickup truck, man. Do general contracting, construction. Right, I need a truck for that. Deer season is next week. Like bow season is here. I need something. I can't be paying the money a rental cost every day either. So that's the direction I got. So there's a lot of that going on. I'm actually picking that truck up tonight. I don't know if I said that already. But yeah, there's just been a lot of added stress for no reason. So I'm way behind. My preparation for October 1st is probably the worst it's been in like 10 years. Yeah, I would say maybe even longer. Man, shoot, I feel like maybe my whole life, like maybe ever since I graduated high school and went to college, I feel like that when I was a high schooler, you know, just barely got on wheels. I didn't know what preparation was. I didn't know how that was supposed to look. And now I feel like I am just completely out of the loop and haven't been shooting my bow, all that stuff. So I'm navigating that, right? Like I gotta have a way to navigate that. So hopefully here the next week I'll get a little more into a rhythm. I am gonna pick up my stuff this weekend. I'm doing a turn and burn, and thank goodness my father-in-law loves restoring old tractors and doing all that stuff. So he's like, "Hey, I found a tractor in Iowa. How close is that to your truck?" And I was like, "Where's that?" And it's really not that far. So I'm actually gonna go pick up a tractor for him and get all my gear, all my stuff, and leave my truck in Omaha to get fixed, and head back home. So it's a turn and burn I'm going to be doing, and then get back and start coaching the football game, pretty much. So, but yeah, that's just the life I got going on. But before I kind of dive into some other things, do want to just quick go through the partners: Vitalized Seed, DH3, Deer Hunter Synthetics, and Wildlife Legends Taxidermy, and Find It Fred. So really want to just kind of touch on each one of these guys quick, because I didn't do anything last week for the intro. But Vitalized Seed, man, my micro plot that I did check on that, growing pretty well. Corn is starting to get chopped for silage around me, so I was hoping that this week they would have that down. Then I'd go there late at night and do some broadcasts in the middle of the night kind of thing to broadcast some more carbon load to extend my micro plot a little bit, just to have something in late season, because that worked so well for me. All my other plot that I had, the 1-2 punch going, I did nitro boost and then carbon load. Those plots, I think I did like six. Let's see, 1-2. I did 5 or 6 acres. I can't remember anymore. I think it was 6 acres of nitro boost and then carbon load on this one farm. And man, when that nitro boost grew so well because we got the rain we needed, and I could not believe how well it did. And there was browse pressure, all that, so we just did a light disc of the soil because we got access to big equipment, and went out there, broadcasted carbon load and collipacked it with, well, actually it's a curl foot collipacker. Not my favorite thing to use, but it's what's sitting there. And yeah, it was growing great. And it's been pretty dry, but I think we got just enough rain that it started going. And I'm super excited to hunt that area, because that's the most sweet plots we've ever had on that farm. So that's going to be really good. And that kind of pairs nicely with, The one plot I actually did nitro boost, and then I rotor tilled that till like I didn't get home till like 3 or 4 a.m. right before a rainstorm, because I rotor tilled, couldn't get anything bigger back there because there's so much corn and we can't ruin the corn's or the farmer's crop. So I had to kind of go in there with a little 5-foot rotor tiller, and I rotor tilled for hours and hours and broadcasted, and it was like literally pouring rain as I like stepped in my truck. So that actually really good. I actually did nitro boost in the spring, rotor tilled it all down. You know, it's a light rotor tilling, and then I planted nitro boost again, but then I put the Vitalized brassicas in with it. Two reasons: I sold out of all my carbon load, and I had ordered some more, but it wasn't going to show up in time. And I'd already had that shipment all spoken for, and I had some leftover nitro boost. So I did that just to see what would happen, but I was mostly doing it because I wanted to give the brassicas a shot. And man, that has worked great. That plot looks awesome. Brassicas are doing really good. All the stuff from nitro boost, which is like a lot of those peas and, you know, sorghum, all that tender crop, the deer have been hammering those, and that's just been allowing the brassicas to really establish and be good. So that wasn't anything other than just me giving something a try because I had it and I wanted something. And yeah, the brassicas are looking really good. So that whole carbon load, food plots, all that stuff ties in really well with DH3, Deer Hunter Synthetics, because when I did that carbon load planning on the one farm, I did end up hanging four trail cameras. Still did not have any cell cameras out. I have just four regular SD card cameras on that place. And that's the same area where I think I did a scouting session podcast, and I was making mock scrapes and talking about my sets. So I was able to kind of put cameras on those, and man, I was extremely happy with what I saw. Those scrapes were being used actively. The one scrape coming off this point out of the swamp was like a barnyard. I mean, there was crap everywhere. All the cattails and weeds and stuff was all matted down because there was just so much deer traffic in there. You could see where they were, you know, turning around using the licking branch. They broke a licking branch of vine in half, so I had to like redo that. So I'm really excited. That's in a location that I've dreamed of having a tree stand, but just never really knew how to do it. And then everything kind of grew up over the last couple years, paired with some cutting that happened this winter. So we have a lot of tender new growth coming in great on like a south facing ridge, and it just is like, finally I feel like I have an opportunity to make a bow shot on a buck and have the odds be in my favor. It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, there's a tree I could sit there, but I really only had one opportunity for a shot. And then I was just really worried that I would be, you know, backdoored essentially, and a buck I was trying to hunt or whatever my target deer was going to win me before I'd be able to get a shot off. And now I have him sitting on the edge of that cut over, or that clear cut. I don't even know if it's considered clear cut. There's still some stuff standing, select cut, I guess would be the right term. I have a lot of shots now, and I have multiple trees in this like zone within shooting distance of this mock scrape. So it just feels a lot better. I'm a lot more confident with it. I'll definitely be throwing a sit at that. Hopefully in the first couple sits here of 2025, I hope to find myself there, because that's actually the same ridge. I killed a decent buck. Like, he was a 3.5-year-old 8-point 2019, October 4th in the morning. I was just, you know, using some trail camera data, past history, and I snuck into this ridge to hang and hunt and shot a great buck at like 9 o'clock in the morning. So I'm not afraid to hunt October mornings if the conditions are right and it makes sense. So I'm pretty excited to give that some sits. And then there was another scrape too. I'm thinking about the DH straight I like a lot. It seems like once I get the scrape started, pretty much any buck in the area, like if there's bucks within a certain range, and it depends on the terrain and stuff, but like in egg country, I always say like the section, right? Like if you have a mile by mile, and maybe I'd even extend it out to like a mile and a half or two, depending on how open it is or how much the deer like to move, within like a couple days, I will have pretty much every buck on that mock scrape, like in that area, especially in the summertime, right? Like this is velvet time, it's the summer, so I'm on the destination food source or in close proximity to where the deer want to be anyways. And it'll be that a bean field, a wheat field, something that has a really big draw for summertime activity. And then what's really cool is I use those scrapes for my summer stuff. And then also they stay active all through the year. The doe groups like using them, and they kind of act as like a really good barometer for to let me know what's kind of going on. And those scrapes that get all those deer on them, those are mostly like your typical field edge scrapes or your nighttime activity scrapes. They're not necessarily like spots that I hunt, you know, throughout the season. But if I do hunt them, it's usually right away in October. It's like those first couple days of October, depending on what the crops are like. And I've had really good success doing that. So DH Straight works great. I don't have to go in there and it's like, man, I don't have any pictures of any deer. I have to go in there and freshen it up. And then all of a sudden, boom, I get pictures of deer. Then it goes away. It's like once they take it over, they stay. They keep going. So that stuff works from a cost perspective thing. You know, one pack of that stuff lasts me pretty much a whole year. And I got lots of scrapes. So it's good stuff. That's deer synthetics, the DH3. And then Wildlife Legends Taxidermy, Henry's mount is done, and he is pumped. His 10-point from last year is done, and he is excited to go pick it up. Hopefully, I'll have some time here in the future to go get that for him. Like I said at the beginning, just been busy, right? And he's itching to get it. Matt was out west hunting, so hopefully was able to get something. But if you need any of those youth season bucks that got shot, you have a cape sitting in your freezer, don't know where to go for a European mount or for a shoulder mount, check out Wildlife Vision Taxidermy. All you bear hunters who maybe don't know what to do with your stuff, or you still have your bear tag in your pocket, you haven't filled it yet, they do great work on bear mounts. I've seen all sorts of different ones. I mean, they ended up mounting my bear from Wyoming I shot a couple years ago. Really cool mount. I mean, I got the face all done, but then it's like a pack mount. But instead of being in a pack or on a backpack, it's actually rolled up and in a European elk skull that I found deadhead out there. So, I mean, they do a lot of cool custom stuff. So go check out Wildlife Vision Taxidermy. Find it, Fred, Tony Hill, and his dog. If deer season's here, at this point in time, everyone probably knows the power of a tracking dog, right? Like, let's not leave deer in the woods to rot. Let's try our best to put, punch tags. And, things happen, right? I've had all sorts of, if it can happen in archery or even with a gun and something crazy were to happen, I've had it happen to me. Deer that you think should be piled up after 50 yards, never find. Or, deer that you maybe don't do quite the right thing with, and the recovery becomes a rodeo because you were uneducated. But I do know, ever since paying more attention to deer trackers, guys who do a lot of it, Tony goes on lots of tracks every year and learn what they have to say, and I implement those things, my recovery rate's been a lot better. I mean, I was sending arrows last year trying to punch doe tags, and I had, quite a few more opportunities for tracking and, punched a lot of tags. But I know that before I would give up, or I would be so confused or not know what's going on, think maybe I just grazed it, maybe I saw something wrong. But when you get a dog tracker out there and you can see the dog work and how quickly they can find an animal, especially when you have heat against you, that was one thing that I had one year. I shot a doe opening morning and thought I made a great shot, and ended up being a really good shot. Just the lack of blood, or my ability to find blood in some tall grass up against a cornfield, the doe ran in the corn, and it took me like all day to find her. I ended up finding her later that day. It was 80 some degrees. It was hot. I did the whole thing, right? I processed the deer. I gutted her. I got her out of the woods. I bought a bunch of ice as soon as I got her. Hung it up in the garage, iced it down, started cutting the, got her all taken care of. And back then I didn't really know. There's a lot of things that went into that, but I do know that not finding that deer right away did not help. And I ended up losing that meat. And that really stung, right? That really stung pretty hard. And knowing what I know now, if I could have just had Tony come over there with the dog, we would have found that thing in less than 10 minutes. It would have been all taken care of, would have had her all iced down or at a processor before it was even hot. And, take care of business. So don't sleep on that. And Tony's been doing it, I think, year six, or this is either year seven, year six. And he's got a lot of tracks under his belt. So make sure you guys are following his page and get his contact information. So if you find yourself needing some help, you know who to reach out to, especially if you're in the greater Grand Rapids area. So, well, that's kind of it for the partners. Thank you guys for putting up with that every week that I do that. I appreciate these guys who work with Michigan Wild and kind of keep the fire in me to make sure I'm providing good stuff for them. And they're all stuff I use, right? Like, all the stuff anyone who I want to partner with is definitely going to be a company that I like the people who are owners of it. Michigan guys, right? I like having local businesses be a part of the show. But talking about Tony, this kind of leads me into something I want to talk about. Henry shot a buck in the youth season. Woo! And I was hoping to record a podcast with him, father, son, and he kind of got a little cold feet on it. I think he's getting to that age now where he thinks about things a little more. When he was younger, he was like, yeah, I'll talk, I don't care. Now he's a little bit more shy with it. Maybe we'll still do one, but just to kind of hit the highlights on it, I have nothing. All my hunting stuff is in my truck, including my tripods and camo and everything. But that did not stop me and Henry from trying to go punch his tag. And thankfully, my dad had an extra tripod, one of those death grips that we could get the gun on, and he could stand up behind. So I used that, And we went out Saturday morning and sat in one of the blinds that I built. I built the blind a handful of years ago, probably 8 years ago. And we went out there because that's kind of like tradition almost. I built the blind for him when he was a little kid. He'd go bow hunting with me. And, you know, he shot a deer last year in it, but the corn was still up. And, but there's like alleys in the corn along the wood lines, right? And I was like, hey, we can try it. I don't think it's going to be, you know, the greatest hunt, but we should definitely try it in the morning because I don't want to go to any of these other spots in the morning. We'd rather go there at night. And we went and sat there and saw a bunch of raccoons. It was good. And we kind of were able to discuss what the game plan should be for the night. He's kind of getting a little older. He's 9, and it's fun strategizing with him. And we talked about what we should do, where we should go. I kind of broke down some options for him. And we kind of came to the conclusion that we should just go to this, like, little bean field. I kind of have – it's a semi-secluded bean field. It's not a very big property. It's 18 acres, which is primarily a field, a little bit of woods. And we kind of talked about that spot because not that we've been seeing a lot of deer. I've been kind of keeping tabs on it throughout the year. And to be honest, it was one of the worst years for, like, seeing bucks and, like, big bucks in. And it's the same area that I hit the recurve debacle buck was in last year. So I was kind of like in the back of my head, maybe he's around. I had seen quite a few year and a half old bucks the year before there. But the big deciding factor was we had noticed that the alfalfa field that was probably 400 or 500 yards away was loaded with deer every night. I'm talking like just gaggles of them. And we were kind of making comments about that. And I told Henry the one night, I said, dude, look at all those deer. I was like, do you see a rack out there at all? And he's like, no, Dad, I don't see a rack. And I said, it's because the big bucks are getting to the point where they want to be kind of by themselves. I said, they're probably moved off. And the only thing you're out here, does, fawns, little bucks. And he kind of thought that was interesting. So our game plan was to go to that bean field. And the thing was, I said to him, I said, we know there's piles of deer 600 yards away. There's a good chance that a nicer buck is no longer, doesn't want to be over there. And he might be hitting these beans before they turn all the way. We should go give that a sit. So we did. And we went out there with our Crocs and our pants. And we each had a camo sweatshirt on, bag chairs, because I don't have the one pop-up blind I have. I brought that to Wyoming for the outhouse, you know, all that stuff. My nice hunting chairs, didn't have those. Those we left in the blind. So I was like, we got some bag chairs. So we carried bag chairs and go sit out. And the thought was that there's some of these like pine trees. And we're like, we can just kind of sit underneath those, have a good vantage point. There was some grass and weeds in front of us. We'll kind of clear a little bit out, be a nice little pocket to sit in. And man, it worked to perfection. We got out there late because I was like, there's no need to sit out here and get baked by the sun. There's not going to be anything out there. And even if there was, we could sneak in there. So probably had an hour and a half before dark left. We got all set up and just started waiting. And about 45 minutes later, boom, see some doe heads in the beans. It's like, okay, they're coming out. And there's this low spot in the field. So I'm just bringing this up because I've noticed this on ag field, especially beans in early season. The bucks like to come out in the lowest point or an inside corner. And depending on the inside corner, sometimes they'll pick the lowest point over the inside corner. And that's this spot. And the does came from the inside corner, but there was a lowest point that goes into the timber there. And I told Henry, I said, we're going to set up. And I said, you could see that hole. You could almost like see the hole through the vegetation because there's some like brush and stuff and like honeysuckle and all that. I said, see that hole right there? That's the low spot. That's where I think a buck's gonna come. Let's get your gun all set up and make sure you can, you know, get the scope over there and be good. It's about 160 yards away. Take a good feel. I don't have a rangefinder. It's just from past experience. I was guessing it was about that far. So we're waiting, and sure enough, about 30 minutes before dark, probably. Those are out there. They're a little far for a shot. And all of a sudden, boop, there that buck comes right through that hole, like I told him. And he's like instantly like excited. I have no binos. I just have the old eye test from 160 yards. And I said, Henry, there's a buck for you. and I could tell it was a rack deer, and it was I assumed it was an 8-point ear, you know, a little over ear wide, and I was like, great buck. He gets on it. I was like, look it through the scope, and what do you think? And he was like, oh yeah, Dad, I want to shoot this one. And I just let him, you know, that was his decision, and I was totally cool with it. I would have had him shoot a spike for all I care. So he's getting, like, Henry is, like, blood pressure elevated. So we have a little bit of a dilemma because the beans are kind of tall. The deer's kind of quartering too. He's got an 8-power first focal plane Strike Eagle Vortex scope on an AR platform 350 Legend. So this is a setup that I built this for Henry to shoot, like, stuff like on 100 yards an end. Easy to get, eye relief is easy. It's the reticle works really good for him. This is not a long range scope or optic on this for him. So I am looking at the deer and I'm kind of struggling to see how the deer is standing, like quartering two, quartering away, broadside. And I could tell he was quartering two, right? Like I knew that much, but I couldn't tell how much. So I'm kind of trying to walk Henry through it. And we had talked about where to aim if the deer are at the 150-yard-ish range. Like, showed a picture of a deer, said typically you aim here, but this far away, I want you to aim a little higher because it's sighted for 100 yards. And we kind of walked through it. So I felt really confident he knew where to hold, right? The problem was the angle. And I tried to talk him through the angles before. Hey, if they're quartering to you, I want you to put it right on the shoulder. If they're quartering away, you kind of want to tuck it behind the shoulder. And so this was like for me as the parent, like I had to trust my son because usually I'm on the binos or have a camera and zoomed way in. This I could not really tell. So we're walking through it. He's really nervous. He's breathing hard. And I'm like, all right, let's be patient. Wait till he's broadside. And he was like walking me through it. He's like, Dad, I think it's good right here. And I said, if you're ready, you can do it. But just take your time. And he did. I could just tell his whole demeanor changed. He got behind the gun. He locked in really good. Didn't rush the shot. Squeezed the shot off. And it was, whoa, whap, hit that deer. Jumped up, mule kicked, you know, started going not good at all. Went maybe 50 yards and just kind of stood there hunched up. And I was like excited for him. Like I had told him, like, watch him. And we did a little high five, a little thing. I was like, dude, he's done. Like you could tell he was just hunched. Like I said, I was just waiting for him to fall over. And then, you know, 10 seconds goes by, he's still there. And Henry's like, what's going on? He's facing directly away from us. He's like, you want me to shoot again? I was like, no, let's not do that. I don't need you to blow an antler off or, you know, make him run farther, right? We're dealing with limited space. Yes, I have permission to recover deer all around the area, but I don't want to go on someone else's property unless I absolutely have to. So I told Henry, I said, hey, let me look through the scope a second, see if I can tell where you hit him. And I looked through the scope and I thought I could see, you know, middle of the body on the exit side. So that made me feel really good, like up and down middle and like middle back, like not gut, still rib cage. I said, Henry, you liver shot him, probably one lung. I was like, he's not going to make it out of the field. So sure enough, about 2-3 minutes go by, which felt like forever for him. He kind of turns and slowly walks like maybe 5 yards and then head almost in the ground. I'm like, he's tipping over. He's going to tip over. And then he kind of just fell straight down, and then we celebrated, like, holy cow, like, you did it, buddy, like, what a great shot. But we also had a thing, I had to kind of use a teaching moment, right? Like, if you double lunged him with a gun especially, like, he would have tipped over, right? He would have passed out, boom, tipped over, dead. But I said, I think you shot him in the liver. He's like, is that guts shot, bad shot? I was like, no, it was not. It's a lethal shot. I said, the problem is, with a liver and one lung, that deer could live for 45 minutes, could live for 6 minutes, could live for 2 hours. I don't know. My guess is the max he's going to live is 2 hours for how rough he was. I said, or he's dead right now. I don't know. So we decided to watch the field till dark. So we watched, you know, when he fell down, we probably waited 15-20 minutes, so we couldn't see him more. He never got back up, so that made us feel really good. Then we went back to the house. We got back over there, and the plan was to wait 2 hours, and we'll go back. And I called Tony up. I said, hey, dude, I know you got a new puppy. I was like, I'm fairly confident Henry Liver won lung this buck. It'd be a great track job to, use your puppy on. And he's a certified trainer or tracker too. So like, this is all legit. And I was like, this will be good. I said, if this animal's still alive, we can have Henry dispatch it with the weapon of season. So we'll be all right. And, he's like, I'll bring Fred, my big dog too, in case we got to go back and get him, but let's go for it. So anticipation's high, right? Like we're all excited. And the nice thing too about the puppy is really slow compared to Fred, because Fred would just run to the track and kind of makes the track a little anticlimactic sometimes. So it worked perfect, man. We got to the shot site, instantly find blood. It's dark blood, so confirmed liver. And there was some good blood actually, where he kind of ran across the field, and Henry Strack and the dog you could tell as a puppy, and the excitement in his demeanor when he smelled that deer and like realized what he was doing, that this was no longer just a fake trail or a practice trail. And he ended up smelling it and then just like straight lined, and which was fine. He straight lined for it. He missed it a little bit, which was fine because the dog's so small, I couldn't see where the beans would. That just let Henry continue to go, and Henry ended up finding the buck in the beans. It went down right where we seen it. So HD got his third buck. That guy is, he's made a great shot. I mean, 150 plus yards, standing up behind a death grip like we use for coyotes, and he squeezed off a shot. And to be honest, it was one lung on the way in and hit the liver on the way out. I mean, if he would have been, I told him, I was like, dude, 2.5 inches. I was like, look at these ribs. I said, this is where you went in. If you would have went in right there, that deer would have tipped over right there. I said, that deer did not know what was going on. He just went to sleep, and he was all piled up. So I think he died right before we even got back to the house. He was dead, but still a safe thing. Got to teach him that. Shout out Tony. Thank you for helping me get him out of there. Jet sleds are the way to go for dragging deer out of the woods. I can't believe how many deer I drug without one. But we got that. I'll take care of it. Henry, yeah, Henry got himself a nice 8-point. I would, when I first seen him, I was like, oh, damn, maybe a 3-year-old. But then after processing him and, like, really paying attention a little bit more. And, like I said, I didn't really get a good look at him until he was on the ground. And then after dragging him and seeing how much he weighed and all that stuff, I'm confident it was a 2.5-year-old buck, which Henry is pumped about. He said he didn't want to shoot no little baby deer. And I said, hey, 8 points ain't baby, and 2-year-old bucks are fine. I said, but I never telling him this before. I was like, if a velvet year and a half old buck comes out, you have to shoot it, because that would be so cool to get. But yeah, so we got that all taken care of, and Henry was super pumped, so he ended up getting a youth season buck. And then now it's doe hunting for him the rest of the year. So, yeah, that was really exciting. That was a good kickoff to the year for how discombobulated I am with everything else going on. It was nice to go out there on a Saturday. You know, he shot a, went hunting in the morning, had a football game in the middle of the day, and went kill a buck at night. That's a pretty good day, in my opinion. So we're going to just, like I said, try to work on some doe kills here the rest of the year. Buy him a couple doe tags. November 15th, we will be sitting up north at your grandparents' house, and the first doe that walks out is going to be in trouble. So it's really cool to the youth hunt thing. I've talked about this in the past. I was always kind of unsure how I felt about it. I still think I am, just a little bit. I do think that there needs to be maybe a little bit of changes, like, if you're over a certain age, maybe you should only use a bow. If you time of year thing, maybe it could get tweaked a little bit, because it's easy, right? Like 2 years in a row, I found the bean fields, that unpressured bean fields, go sit out, and it's like ringing a dinner bell, and it's almost like automatic, right? Which, granted, you do have to have the property, and I'm speaking from a guy that is in a high deer density area, that has access to great properties, that has beans, that has that, So that's a completely different mindset for me, or opportunity for someone like me and my family and Henry, compared to a guy that's a public land hunter that's, you know, big woods setting. So maybe it is a good time of year. Maybe it is a good thing that we're doing all these things for these kids. I just know that I take my kid out in the woods way more than just on youth season, right? He's out there helping with food plots. He's helped me make mock scrapes. I mean, just this year, he had quite a bit of seat time either driving a quad or working the rotor tiller or pulling a cul-de-packer, doing these things outside. And he was actually upset when I went and did the one plot without him this year. And I, you know, he had other commitments, and I was like, you're going to do that, and I'm going to do this. And he fought me on it. But, you know, dad rules a little bit. So, I mean, I think youth season is great for being used the right way. But I do encourage any dads or moms out there that have kids to make sure that you're also giving them time, you know, in the summer for hunting stuff and then throughout the year too. Like, maybe take them with you now and then during the season. Don't just only do the youth hunt with them. That's it. And then age too, right? Like, I think there is a point where maybe the kids can be a little too young. Like, I know when Henry was 5, there was no way I was going to take him. And then when he turned 7 in that spring, and then by that next fall, so he was, you know, 7.5 going almost to 8, there was a big difference in his ability of handling a gun. And so I think it comes down to the parent and what you want out of it. So I'm happy that we went. I'm happy that 2 years in a row he's able to do it. Even if it was only doe only this year, we still would have went out and tried to smack a doe. So it's good. It's good. But yeah, let's kind of move off of this subject here a little bit. I don't know how long I've been yabbering on. If you can't tell, I'm driving home from work. But some current events in the whitetail woods. Yes, I believe one of my target deer is alive. I did plots this year. I don't have any cameras where this deer is. It's B8. It's a buck that I seen a bunch last year. He was all broken up, the broken 8, the short BA for short. He, I think, is the deer that I've been seeing the tracks for. I did when I've been doing the food plots, I did a little, you know, check on the food plot, set a scout, recently, and see where the acorns were, you know, if there's any fresh, you know, scrapes anywhere, if they're, make sure they're hitting my mock scrapes, those kind of things. Huge set of tracks. Like, if I see a set of tracks, I'm always excited, no matter where I am. Like, if I saw those tracks in Iowa, I'd be excited. Like, these are, you know, not your normal set of tracks. Like, there's good tracks, there's big tracks, this is a big set. So there's only one deer, really, that I think could do that, and it would be B8. He was a pretty big body buck last year. I pegged him at 4-year-old, and if he wasn't all busted up, I would have sent an arrow on him at November 4th, or I think it was November 4th in the morning. Last year, but I was kind of thinking it was him, and then a buddy sent me a picture because he knows the area I'm hunting, and he kind of got a picture and he sent it to me. He's like, hey, this is in your neck of the woods. And sure enough, I am 95% certain that's B8. He looks great. He is just a big framed 8-pointer. If I were to critique him, mass, he doesn't have a lot of mass, thus the reason we're breaking up his tines last year. But beautiful beams, good tine length, looks big. So I'm pretty fired up about that deer. So I thought I'd take time to kind of, like, mindset, right? Like, I'm behind the 8-ball is how I feel, because I haven't been shooting my bow. I don't have any cell cameras out, don't have any cameras on this area, but I'm still gonna just hunt the way I would hunt even if I did have that stuff, and that is play it smart but be aggressive. I have done that in October for the last handful of years with great success. And knowing that deer is in the general area, my plan is get my bow back. I'll have my bow this weekend, and I will just, you know, shoot morning to night, right? Like, rip some arrows before work, rip some arrows when I get home. I don't care if I have to turn a floodlight on. I am going to send arrows every day, multiple times a day, and, you know, just make sure everything's good. I've still been, you know, lifting a little bit of weights here and there, keep my body in good shape. My shoulder feels great. I'm not afraid of that. When years pass, that would be a really big concern, because if I were to go shoot my bow, you know, 5 times, I would have, you know, I'd be sore the next day. So this year, being more in a scheduled workout regimen and, you know, with that functional fitness slash protect the shoulder in mind, I have not had the shoulder fatigue like at all. So that's a good thing not to be worried about. So I know I'll be able to put some reps in. And then it's, you know, continue to do that. And then have my mindset right. Like, it's going to depend if the corn's still staying or not when I slide in there. There's corn this year that I have to contend with. There's acorns everywhere, dropping really, really hard. But my mindset is, if I get the weather front I want with the right wind, I have multiple options because I'm mobile hunting. Like, I love having the flexibility of mobile hunting, using my saddle or a tree stand, depending on where I'm going, that I can make a play on this property or on this deer, with that in mind. And what I'm really looking for is, I would love to have some precipitation, and then go slide in right after a rain, either be that the following morning or even that afternoon, and hunt a scrape, right? Like, I want to get that stereotypical rain, all day rain, October 1st through the 5th, go set up on one of those big scrapes, mock scrapes I got that I've had a lot of history with, and set up on that and just catch them coming to check that, either J-hooking into it or catch them on his way to that scrape, cut him off before he gets there kind of thing. So I'm really looking forward to those kind of hunts. I'm very much so in the game. The passion's there. And yeah, man, I can't wait. And then there should be a caveman should be around too. What he was last year, if he makes a jump, he's a cool buck, a unique buck, and I will shoot him. Like, if he comes walking out, I will zap him. I will take the I'll double long him as quick as I can. So that I'm looking forward to these first couple of days of October. And then I don't have any confirmation because of my SD card cameras, but I'm going to be pulling those before October 1st. I think I can get to them either. It's one of those things. Do I hunt October 1st? If I hunt October 1st, I might, depending on where I'm working, I might just check cards, like go middle of the day, check cards, and then hunt that night. Or I'm going to try to pull those cards before the season and just have, you know, a month plus of four cameras that are spread out really well and have a game plan set up by that. So I feel really good. Like, I feel like I have some really good hunts. And then I have a public land spot or area that I've scouted multiple times that in years past, when I've had cameras there, I usually have a decent buck or multiple bucks using some of these areas in the first 10 days of October. So, and I want to say it's the one spot is on a south wind. So it depends. So, like, what I've did is I scouted these areas and I have these like layaway spots. And what that means to me is, maybe if my private land pieces aren't doing so good, or I don't have favorable conditions, or let's say I hunted it the night before and I want to hunt back-to-back nights, but the access doesn't make sense with the wind direction, I don't want to pressure it, I have like these, or it's like a northwest wind is, I feel like, a premium early season wind, because it usually means you have some sort of cold front or change or something. I'm going to use that to hunt some of my private pieces where I have a lot of history. But let's say if we have day number four in a row of a south wind, well, then I'm going to go sneak into a maybe a public land spot. And I found this scrape and I found this point scouting this spring that I cannot stop thinking about. I wanted to get a camera in there, but obviously I had the whole issue with trail cameras, so I didn't get them. But it's a spot that I cannot stop thinking about. And especially because, man, the track, it was a good-sized buck track right where I found this setup. The scrape had a high-licking branch in it. The trail, there was, like, the main trail where the does like to be, and then there was, like, the secondary trail that was, like, sticking to the cover. Like, it just kind of has a lot of things going for that. I'm pretty excited to go hunt. So I can't stop thinking about it, so I'll probably throw a sit at that in the first 10 days of October as well. I'm hoping I can do quite a bit of hunting. I don't know. I might only be able to go hunt once. Who knows? Because I got football and all that stuff. But I feel like I got three solid options, maybe even four. Like, to be honest, I have a lot of options. I forgot about another spot that I hunted last year and passed a great buck in the morning, October 1st. Like, if I got a south wind October 1st, like, I'll probably go right to that spot because that worked perfect. And I know of some deer in that area too. So yeah, I got lots of options. So I'm excited. Like, this is the stuff that keeps me up at night, and I'll be going. So hit it hard in the paint. That's what I want to do for that. And then to kind of put a bow here on this episode, if you're still with me, thank you everyone who's still listening. It's going to kind of loop back into the beginning of this episode. So tonight I'm picking up a truck, right? And the whole story about how I'm getting this truck or found it, marketplace, blah, blah. The dude that owns this truck, I was searching in Iowa or near Omaha marketplace because I thought, oh, I'll just get a plane ticket, get my truck, or buy this other truck, load it up with all my crap, and then drive it home. Well, I found a truck that I was interested in, and I messaged the guy, and he's like, the kicker to this is that truck's in Michigan right now. And I was like, what? What part of Michigan? Well, come to find out, not too far away. So I said, well, that's funny because I live in Michigan and I'm working and I can come swing in and see it on the way home. He's like, no way. He's like, did I list this in Michigan or I list this in Iowa where I live? And I was like, oh, totally Iowa. I said, I kind of laid out the story for him. So he kind of knew what I had going on. It was really cool. So I ended up meeting this guy and me and him started talking deer because Michigan boy that moved to Iowa 13 years ago. He's probably 10 years older than me. And holy cow, has he shot some just absolute magnums. This dude I've never heard of him. You go look him up on social media. He doesn't have social media really. You'd have no really idea of the level of a killer this guy is. I mean, he has pretty much done it all, right? Like, he has shot some, there's 200s in there with a bow. There's crazy amount of Booner, 170 plus deer with a bow. There's a typical high 190s in there, the muzzle. I mean, this guy has just shot some awesome deer. Talking to him, it really, I really appreciate the time I've had talking with this guy. He broke it all down how, like, he was psycho for deer hunting. Like, he went hard in the paint for a decade. He moved to Iowa the first 10 years, 8 to 10 years, he went hard in the paint. And he had success. I mean, he's got mounts to prove that what he was doing and how he was doing it was working. Fast forward to current events or current time right now for him, he really opened my eyes. He's like, I was obsessed with deer hunting and bow hunting. I had to shoot these deer. I had to, I'm passing 4-year-olds. I'm passing 160s to get, 180s. I'm passing 184. Like, this dude's like, he's just talking the talk. Every guy that dreams of having this opportunity. And he told me, he's like, I don't even go anymore. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, I don't even get that worked up. He's like, I just take my kid out and my kid shoots some deer, my wife. And he's like, I don't even have a desire to even go anymore. And we kind of kept talking, right? And we kind of kept circling back to it. And I was like, well, why is that? Is it because you've already shot a couple 200s? Is it because you've shot so many? Are you looking for something, like, is there a certain type of deer that would, rekindle that fire? Like, why is that fire for you personally gone? And we kind of talked about it in person, and then, fast forward a day or two, and we started texting again, and he sent me a really nice text about it, and it was eye-opening for me. And he said, I missed a lot of things with my kids and my family. If it was deer season, I wasn't around. I mean, I did it all by myself. All these great bucks I shot, he's like, I was by myself. And now when I get to spend time with my kid and my wife, he's like, that's what's important to me now. And it hit me really hard. Not getting super emotional here, but like, I'm serious, guys. Like, he told me that, and I told him, I said, I'm so thankful that you told me this and you enlightened me with this, because as a guy that loves hunting and has been just tore up with hunting since a little kid, I fight the urge to become obsessed. I am like, I flirt with the edge, right? Like if I take a couple more steps, like I'm in the deep end, like, and that to me is like being all consumed by it. Like that's the fight I have. And last year was a pretty good fight. When you have a 200-inch deer that, you know, in Michigan in a very heavily pressured area that you know is around, and you don't know he's 200 at the time, but you know he's giant. I kind of always gut checked myself and said, I am not going to let that deer, you know, change who I am as a person or a hunter. I'm going to hunt my hunts and do it normal, and it's just a deer. And I'm really happy I did, because I felt like I did a pretty good job of not getting too consumed by a deer. And, you know, when the outcome happened the way I didn't want it to happen, I handled it really well. I feel like if I would have got obsessed, or I would have completely changed my mood and all that stuff. And don't get me wrong, like I still think about that deer all the time, and I'm like, man, what could have been. And there's been a little bit of a, like, it's like a football team, right? When a football, like the Lions right now, like I'm really worried about the next game for the Lions, because he's had a huge emotional win against the Ravens. They've went super hard. They might have a hangover. And I feel like this season, like this summer and this spring, was kind of a hangover for me a little bit, knowing that that deer was gone. And like that was my one opportunity in a long time that I might never have again, or might have next year. I don't know, or might have this year. I don't know if there is a deer like that. That was about the worst I got. But hearing him talk about that and him sharing his story and what he's done and all that stuff, and then knowing that I personally have struggled with like jumping off the deep end and being consumed by it, really refreshing my mentality and my reasoning, and made me really look inward and be like, you know what, I got to make sure that I do this for, I'm doing this for me, but also I got to enjoy it. It's got to be fun. I want to keep that fire. I want to be just as excited when I'm 75 years old to go chase whitetails as I am right now, or as I was when I was 20. And, you know, going out with Henry and, you know, sharing the woods with my son is, you know, electric, right? Like you can't replace that feeling you get doing those things. And looking forward to this fall, you know, sharing some camps with some guys, going hunting with them, you know, more of a group, kind of a team effort with Rome, right? Filming hunts and filming each other, and going to just have a great time doing that. I mean, I'm feeling really good. The passion for deer is there. And hearing him share his story was like, all right, keep doing what I'm doing. Don't go crazy on it. At the end of the day, it's deer. And take, you know, however you want to take that, take that. I mean, I'm still super passionate, right? Like I love bow hunting, and I think about deer all the time, and I'm thinking about deer I've passed and strategizing how I'm going to arrow in them, how I'm going to hunt, what time of year I'm going to hunt. I'm just talking about the first 10 days of October right now. And I mean, I got a plan for the second, third, fourth week, right? So that's just why I wanted to bring up this. And that was one of the big things I wanted to touch on, was that if any of you guys out there, especially dads, right? Like you have that dad guilt or that mom guilt when you're not home, don't give up on bow hunting. Don't give up on your hobbies, but it's going to change, right? You're gonna be maybe not going out as much. Maybe you don't get to golf as much. Maybe you don't get to go fishing as much. Maybe you have to kind of take it easy on the fishing so you can go hunting more. Or maybe you got to only hunt, you know, half as much, or, you know, three quarters as much as you used to because you got a little kid at home. But don't worry, it comes back, right? That passion's still there, and what comes around goes around in that regard. So keep at it. Don't give up on this passion. I appreciate what he had to say. Hopefully that made sense to everyone, but that's kind of where my headspace was at. I'm going to keep the fire lit, but not too much, right? Just keep a nice simmer, and then I'll be doing this for a long, long time. So, all right, guys, I think that's kind of it. I think I'm going to wrap it up on that. I really am looking forward to kind of getting some sort of normalcy back in my life here in the next couple weeks. Got a lot of guys in the works to do some awesome episodes with. Shout out to everyone who's been on Michigan Wild and wants to be on Michigan Wild. It means a lot. It means a lot to have this community, guys. And it's crazy to think that we have another season upon us, And there's going to be so many pictures, so many videos, so much fun stuff. I've already been jacked just watching guys shoot bears, watching guys shoot does, like seeing trail cam pictures, the excitement, the buzz. I mean, dude, the fall is here. It's officially the fall. And I cannot wait. So that's it. Just please give this podcast a review or ranking, or you're listening to it. Go check out social media, Mission Wild Pod on Instagram. Go follow me on there. I haven't been really posting much because I've been so busy, but there's gonna be a lot of hunt updates on there probably, and you know, cool little reels and stuff through Rome and all that too. So make sure you guys are just interacting on that. But you know what to do. Make sure you guys get out there this week. Make sure you are focused. Shoot some arrows. If you're shooting fixed blades, make sure those arrows are flying true. Make sure you are using proper equipment. The saddle, the tree stand, the harnesses. If you have presets, make sure you have a lifeline in there. Check your straps. Be safe. So we can do this for a long time. So, all right, guys. Have a good week. Catch you next week.
Your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also, expensive. Sell their pint-sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees. Because somewhere, a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kid will outgrow tomorrow. And he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.